check my inbox and what do I see? Just another day, another T-R-A-D-E. I'm an addict, and I need it in my veins. I'm an addict, otherwise I feel plain now. Every day I wake up, people got a problem. Making all these trades up, got me singing got them. But I've been paid up, I even started from the bottom. See, I don't wait up, I ain't even playing possum. So what it cost, I'm just a couple of firsts. Can't believe that it worked, not to say I'm a jerk. But I'm an addict, it's what I said in the first. You can curse all you want, you can pray in your church. But I'ma keep tapping return, I went up, I learned. I ain't trying to burn any bridges, I yearn. For the feeling I earn, all my winners to turn. You had a cheek before I drop you like the beat. I'm an addict, and I'm not really ashamed. I'm an addict, I'm reclining with the brain. I'm an addict, and the pot is what I'm playing. I'm an addict,
Russin Rocky.
Other names, Trade Addicts Pod. Let's go.
I am Rocky Petrella, and I have a trading problem.
I am Tommy Blair, and I, too, have a trading problem.
What up? It's your boy, Herms, and I also have a trading problem.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to session 384 of the Trade Addicts Podcast. And I know Frank has a little DAP network former thing he says here, but I can never remember what it is, so I can't be saying it right now. Sorry, Frank. But as you heard, Frank is not here tonight, but I have two of my favorite people, Tommy Blair, stepping in for Frank this week. Tommy, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing awesome. The co-host bench is very deep. Just think you guys could have had, you know, Zach Reed or somebody great, but you called me up, and so I'm super grateful. It's great to see you, Rocky.
We definitely had somebody great here. We love having you, Tommy. And one of my other favorite people and a close friend of the pod, Herms, is here tonight. Herms, what's up? How you doing?
Hey, out here chilling in these streets, baby, just doing all that pretend football stuff. It's real nice to be back here. It's real nice to be back into the part of a calendar where actual football is happening and we're not just arguing over hypothetical stuff. I really prefer it when there's real things to talk about.
Yeah, it's funny. Russ is the exact opposite. He loves it way more when we're just talking theoretical stuff and values and all that stuff. But before we get started, why don't we let you do, you plug whatever you want to plug. Tell us who you are, what you do, and where they can find what you do.
Yeah, so I am C.H. Herms. That is the name that I go by out here in these business streets. A lot of the forward-facing stuff that I do is with FTN Fantasy. I do a weekly article over there at ftnfantasy.com. I also come out with a couple newsletters that go straight into people's email boxes. And I have a podcast with my good friend Tyler Orzynski, aka 2024's number one Fantasy Pros ECR in season, you know, ranker. You know, just I gotta hype him up a little. You know, I mean, I think I'm fun to listen to, but he's the real superstar. That drops every Tuesday. That's a really cool thing. And then
I also about Frank, by the way.
Yeah,
I'm fun to listen to, but Frank's a superstar.
Yeah, some of us are just along for the ride. We know, exactly. We know where our bread is buttered. That is very that is very true. But then other than that, I do a lot of behind the scenes stuff at Fantasy Points. If you listen to their podcast, there's a decent chance that I probably produced it and did a bunch of the sound stuff for it. And then you're probably not a beginner if you're listening to this, but like if you are like a new, brand new player to fantasy football, every single week I do five things that are important to know if you're a beginner going into, you know, week three, week four, whatever. That every Thursday, that'll be a thing. That's basically what I do.
A lot going on there, but that sounds great. So Frank was not able to be here, but was kind enough to, as always, set up the news for us. So let's get right into that news. And like you said, we now are in football season, and now, unfortunately, we are in injury season. Always sucks when this starts happening, but Joe Burrow, turf toe, needs surgery, out 3 months. Browning appears to be the starter for now. Frank gave us a couple stats here. In 9 games as a starter in 23, Browning had 4 games with 18-plus points in 4-point per TD leagues. And as a reminder, Higgins is still basically on a 1-year deal with the Bengals. So we also have one of the listener questions we're throwing in here because it was Burrow related. So we'll start with that, Herm. So what are you doing if you're a contender who just lost Burrow? And Dinah Stud, who asked the question, says that he knows I'll think that I'm asking about my TA2 team, which is kind of funny because he said this to me in the chat too. And I was trying to be a contender, but I've started 0-2 and I'm like 10th in points. So I'm not sure that I am. So I don't think I want to move off Burrow anyway, because I'm a contender. But anyway, getting back to the question, Herms.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. If you're in this situation, just take a moment and you're allowed to feel sad. You're allowed to feel sorry for yourself. You're allowed to just wallow in that for a little bit. I think that's probably the first thing you got to do. You really got to process the loss. But then once that's over, I mean, I'm always hesitant whenever people say, like, okay, whenever a quarterback gets hurt and they're going to be out for an extended period of time, there's always the argument to be made, like, well, you know, if you're not contending anymore, you could probably pivot off of them. You could get, you know, draft picks. You could do whatever and, you know, kind of pivot for the future and do things that way. But there's a defined timeline for his return. Like, he's going to come back, and it's not like he tore an ACL. It's not like he had an Achilles tear or something. Like, this is something where there is at least a chance, if the Bengals are still in it, he'll come back by mid-December. So in those types of situations where the window's not, like, too terribly long, just try to find a way to stick with it and just get some supplemental QB help. And plus, especially if you're playing in, like, a TA league and you're stuck with Joe Burrow, without him for a little bit, like, tight ends, that tight end premium gets you a lot of extra points. You don't have to start a second quarterback necessarily. If you can go out and make a separate deal for a really good high scoring tight end, you're going to be able to overcome that point differential anyway. So just try to exhaust all of your options that way before doing anything dramatic with getting rid of Burrow himself.
It is a good point that you don't necessarily have to fill with the quarterback. I also don't hate the idea of, especially if he's on waivers, but even throwing a third or a fourth at Browning as a substitute, just something you can get really cheap, or maybe a player of that value to send for Browning. Because I'm sure if somebody actually has them on their roster, they'll be thrilled that they can get anything for Browning right now. So especially if they're not like a top contender, they already have like three quarterbacks. I know in that situation, I'd be looking to move them. I don't really have any Browning, but also, it's funny that this question came up. I'm in another league where I'm trying to contend, and I'm not even saying this is necessarily what I would be trying to do, but it was thrown at me, and I accepted. Basically, a rebuilder through Burrow plus Addison and a couple late picks for Josh Allen to me. And so I went and did that. And I don't necessarily recommend usually trading the injured guy to get the replacement. But when you're getting a tier up, I was willing to do it, and I felt Addison was a good enough price. I don't know how likely that is in a lot of leagues. A lot of people aren't going to want to move off. And it's only like a couple quarterbacks, like two or three quarterbacks that are a range up from Joe Burrow. So there's a lot of people that are going to be trading those guys. But this guy happened to be a rebuilder, and it worked out for him. But it's just another, I guess, food for thought there. So, Tommy, what are your thoughts on the whole Burrow situation here?
Yeah, the market's not firm yet. I was digging around in my leagues, and we have a Discord over at the Superflex Super Show, and I just threw out the question, what deals are actually getting done? Can we beat the market, right? Can we beat the trade calculators and figure out what it actually costs to get this guy, to get Joe Burrow? The lowest price that I saw was actually a deal that I got done. Trevor Lawrence straight up for Joe Burrow. That's sort of the basement price. Yes.
Let's go.
No issues at all.
Especially for me, that's crazy, because like I consider Trevor Lawrence like a below average quarterback, basically. So
here's the thing though, Rocky, is the way that you and I play Dynasty and fantasy football are different. I had six elite quarterbacks. And so the market was fairly dry. The trading partners were limited. You know, there weren't quarterbacks to go around. And so if you're in that type of situation, yeah, you can name your price and you can layer in Joe Burrow, and we'll see you next year, probably. I'm not going to start Joe Burrow week 16 or whatever when he comes back if I have five other elite quarterbacks. That's not how everyone else is playing, though. And so I think what you got to do right now is make a dynasty move. We're only a couple weeks into this thing. There's still so much runway. What you're looking for is points, right? And so I love your bid there, Herms, of go get an elite tight end if you're in a TA league. If you're in a more traditional league, spend those extra firsts. Why do you have the extra firsts if you're not going to spend them at this moment as a contender? To go get an elite quarterback. You don't want to patchwork with a Trevor Lawrence. I don't think that's the right move. The ceiling bids for Joe Burrow in the Discord I was seeing were Lamar Jackson types. And it's like, I wouldn't have done that in the beginning. So there's entrenched managers who aren't going to give up Joe Burrow unless they somehow come out a winner as if Joe Burrow wasn't injured at all. And then there's those few panicked managers. There doesn't seem to be a real settled market price yet. And so I think it's about just investigating to see where the 11 other managers or 9 other managers are landing, because each league feels very different at this point. I think that's going to solidify over the next few days, though, and we're going to have pretty common market prices, which is probably going to be, you know, a QB2 and a 2-1 swap, or a QB2 and Devontae Smith, something like that, that's going to get it done for those contenders. And I don't begrudge anyone for doing that if you're really a contender. If you're a paper tiger, you know, maybe we play this thing out. The season is still young. You don't have to make the decision just yet. Joe Burrow will probably see a dip in value, but you're still going to have that accessibility to the market whenever you want to act.
Yeah. And one more question I'll ask about this before we move on. I'll throw it back to you, Herms. Are you concerned about your Bengals, about your even Jamar Chase, but also T. Higgins and Chase Brown?
I mean, Jamar Chase was still pretty good last time we saw Jake Browning in extended action. Like, obviously, it took a hit, but he was still usable in your lineup every single week. So, like, adjust expectations, but don't feel like you have to bench him or anything. He's not all of a sudden going to be some, like, fringe option. And, like, Higgins, maybe, you know, that does get a little bit tough. Asking a backup quarterback to support more than one viable pass catcher is a very difficult thing to do, but we're still probably looking at like a flex in, you know, good weekly matchups. And then as far as Chase Brown goes, I don't know. I mean, he's still out there a ton. They're still giving him the ball a lot. He's seeding some snaps a little bit here and there. You know, he's not, you know, seeing like this overwhelming majority in that department, but that's like really nitpicky. Like, that's a little bit, you know, too inside baseball. So yeah, like if you drafted Chase Brown, you know, wherever you did in a startup, or you acquired him for whatever in a trade this offseason, like, it's fine. You didn't goof. Everything's going to be okay. He's probably still going to be viable for you.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I feel like, yeah, like last time he was out there, Browning was competent. He was good enough, like you said. He's not necessarily going to support two stud, like having them be stud wide receivers each week. But I think Higgins will have his moments too. And Browning does like to sling it around a little bit. You're obviously not, you're lowering your expectations, like you said, but I am not super worried about any of those guys. I they're not going to be obviously quite as good as they were, would be with Burrow, but I think we're still going to have solid fantasy assets all around.
The ADOT tends to go down though, doesn't it, Rocky, with Browning? This is a 70% completion guy, someone who does spread the ball around, excuse me. But I think the propensity to go deep is probably less likely. And so, I mean, you saw it this week where Jamar Chase was getting a lot of really shallow targets. And so he's going to eat no matter what. If there is a winner in this entire situation, it might be someone like Noah Fant, one of those sleepers at the tight end position where he could see an increase in volume. And that's really all we're looking for at that position.
Yeah, good point. Also, other unfortunate injury news, a lot of it this week. Austin Eckler, torn Achilles. Might be a career ender. No real discussion yet on who will take his carries among McNichols and Bill. We're all excuse me. We're all like Bill to the moon, though, right?
1000%, man.
Yeah. Everyone loves Bill. I'm looking forward to it. I have him in quite a few leagues, so we'll see how it goes here. But Jaden Reed broke a collarbone, headed to IR. Who do we see as the wide receiver one going forward? And then Frank asks, is it even a wide receiver? So I guess that's implying Tucker Kraft. You think? I see Tommy shaking his head.
It's Tucker Kraft season, baby. Now, I can see an increase in volume for folks like Dontavian Wicks. It might just be a different guy every week, but it seems like Tucker Kraft does have a very stable role. And fewer competition for targets is a good thing at that position. I think of all the smart analysts who say that, you know, you want your tight end to be a top two target earner on their team. This clears the path a little bit further for that.
Yeah, I kind of lean towards the different guy every week thing. Like you said, I do think Kraft has a stable role, but among the wide receivers,
You know, there, a lot of them are getting banged up all the time. You know, I think Christian Watson's also, I don't know if he's on IR, but I know he's banged up. And then, you know, you got Golden, who hasn't done much yet, and then Wicks, and then Dobbs, and then, like, there's just so many guys there. But is that kind of where the train of thought you're on, Herms, or is there any particular one of them you like?
I mean, Tucker Kraft, probably.
Yeah.
if we're just talking strictly about the wide receivers, I think it's going to be too difficult to predict week to week. But, like, dude, Tucker Kraft, you know, like, he's a dog. And it's also, like, I don't know. He's the easier one to throw to. It's the lower A dot. It's the more comfortable, you know, sort of safety blanket for Jordan Love.
Yeah.
And it's not as though, you know, like, the Green Bay passing attack has clearly taken a step forward compared to last year. Like, they are able to get things, you know, a lot deeper. So, like, I do want that to be mentioned as well. Like, this is a passing game we should be more interested in overall, just from like an ecosystem standpoint and the way that we're viewing it more from like dynasty. But if we're just zooming in and looking at like this window right now, we're going to have to wait and see what's going to happen, especially because, you know, like, the receiver we're the most hyped about is still only 2 games into his NFL career. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's not necessarily guaranteed that any rookie is going to have a role right away anyway. So, like, yeah, it's craft or bust.
Yeah. Go ahead, Tommy.
If you want to have a sleeper, I would, you know, pick the name Romeo Dubs, 72% route participation. He's over 2 yards per route run, 2.34. Like, these are really strong metrics that you're looking for. 20% first read target share, 0.098 first downs per route run. Like, those are the predictive metrics at wide receiver that suggest that this player is good regardless of the environment that they're in, and the environment just got better.
Yep. Okay, so next, Aaron Jones to IR. Vikings signed Cam Akers, but it appears to be Mason's backfield. Frank puts right with a bunch of question marks, but I think that's pretty clear. I guess before I move on, do you think that Mason is going to be able to do, like, with McCarthy out here also, are you excited for Mason season, or are we kind of probably everyone's going to be just kind of meh?
I mean, I don't know, dude. Okay, so the Carson Wentz part of it's disappointing. I get that. Let's just get that out of the way. It's been said. The Band-Aid's been ripped off. Okay, deal with it. It is what it is. But when it comes to Jordan Mason, I do think we have to feel pretty good because, you know, you think about where Kevin O'Connell came from in the grand scheme of things anyway. The Vikings are basically running a McShanahan-style offense anyway. And look at where Jordan Mason just had his most recent success in the NFL, filling in for Christian McCaffrey last year. A system that's very similar to what they're going to be doing in Minnesota. I think, like, schematically, it's a very good fit. I also think the fact that there's not a ton of, like, real competition behind him, except, like, Cam Akers might get an annoying amount of touches, but, like, bro, Jordan Mason, we've seen him carry this workload before and be the dude and do things pretty chill. It's not going to be a ton of PPR upside, but I'm absolutely here for it. Like, I was advocating for him as potential standalone value, like, before the season even started. So, like, obviously I don't want it to be under the circumstances of somebody else being hurt, but it is kind of cool to at least see him, like, whoa, okay, yeah, he's going to get some opportunity to do something here, and that's going to be pretty cool, man.
And yeah, I mentioned it's also on our list of too many injuries here. I mentioned the McCarthy injury. So, Tommy, with that injury as well, are you concerned about the Vikings kind of as a whole right now? Because, I mean, no one's really gotten off to a great start there, including Jefferson. Hawk is, you know, who I have way too many shares of, has been like a non-factor. Neither Mason nor Jones have really done a ton in the first couple weeks, even with McCarthy. So we could be a month here with Carson Wentz, of all people, at quarterback. So I want to just get your thoughts. Obviously, from a dynasty's perspective, it's not a huge deal that McCarthy's out a month. But like I said, I guess maybe for the whole 2025 season, even, because McCarthy wasn't looking amazing these first couple weeks either. So are we concerned about our Vikings?
You hear folks like J.J. Zacharyson talk about ambiguous backfields, right? This is an ambiguous offense. It doesn't necessarily have a firm identity. And I think the dynasty market and the fantasy market at large is quick to fade those types of offenses because they just don't know who it's going to be. And so everyone gets downgraded. No one's really downgrading Justin Jefferson. Let's set him aside in this part of the conversation. But I think it's an opportunity to buy low and to buy free as well. This feels like a backfield where a pass catching running back could emerge out of nowhere. I mean, Xavier Scott, someone that Jay over in the Superflex Super Show Discord flagged today as the next backup. Maybe Cam Akers is going to be on that depth chart. I think he got signed to a practice squad today. But there's a lot of opportunity in this offense to establish something in the backfield. There's plenty of opportunity to define who the number two target is going to be in the route tree. Is it going to be TJ Hawkinson? Is it going to be one of these wide receivers? You know, we're going to be coming off a suspension with Jordan Addison. I think there's a lot of upside to this offense that maybe isn't being priced in to these players right now. So I'm more of a buyer than a holder or seller.
I kind of agree, especially, again, I've never been a big McCarthy guy, but I'm a big O'Connell in that system guy after what we saw from Darnold last year. And I was, you know, talking down what he got in the first two games, but it was just his first two games that he's played in his NFL games in his career. So I feel like they're going to at least get him to a level of competency. I mean, this is not great that he's got a 2 to 4 week setback here. But I think at some point this season, we'll see something better than what we were seeing in the first couple of weeks. I don't think he's ever going to be like a top-end quarterback, but neither was Sam Darnold, and they got plenty of production out of their offense last year with Sam Darnold. So, okay, so Brock Purdy also missing multiple weeks with turf toe. I think I saw like 2 to 5, which is quite a range there. And then Jalen Polk to the Saints, which Frank loves to throw these random things on here, which I don't think is anybody interested about this restart. I was never a Polk guy to begin with, but I don't know if either of you two were.
I mean, like,
I know there were some people that liked him coming out. So
yeah, good for him, I guess. Yeah. Like, that's cool. I hope it works out for him. But I mean, from a dynasty perspective, no. I'm more interested potentially in, you know, the Mac Jones part of the Brock Purdy news. If anything, you're talking about, you know, you might need a cheap quarterback replacement if you're the Burrow manager or something like that. I would honestly go shopping for Mac Jones if he's going to get a few starts. He actually looked pretty good running the offense and feeding it just directly to Juwan Jennings and Ricky Pearsall and Christian McCaffrey and no one else. He knew exactly where to put it, and it worked basically every single time. Like, that's honestly, like, I care about that more than the Polk thing.
Yeah, I hear you. And then lastly, just a couple more injuries. I don't think none of these look like long-term concerns, but Frank just threw them on here. Jaden Daniels, the sprained knee. He even says no long-term concerns yet, but questionable for next week. And a running QB with any injury is a little scary. And then Justin Fields is in the concussion protocol. The status for Tampa Bay is uncertain. He says, also, welcome back to reality, Jets.
Oh, no.
It was very interesting the first week, and then it was like, oh, it's the Jets this past week. But, okay, so that finishes up our news. As always, Herms, we throw it to the guests. Do you want to go with the listener questions first or the trades?
I mean, this is the Trade Addict show, not the Listener Questions Addict show. So I think we do need to go there first.
Okay, we'll start with the trades. As a reminder, all TA leagues are 12-team Superflex PPR, 1.75 tight end premium with 0.05 per return yard for all the leagues except TA1. And we do have a couple TA1 trades, though nobody involved in the return game, so it doesn't really matter. But the first one is one of our smaller deals. As you'll hear, we got a lot of big deals in this one, in this show. So, but this one's one of the smaller ones, and not even that small, but David Njoku for Travis Etienne straight up. Herms, who you got?
I mean, like, Etienne, if you're going for the right now part of it, for sure. But, like, I also think Njoku's demise because of Harold Fannin's being a little bit overblown and because we have the tight end premium, that does kind of help him a little bit. So, while I do lean Etienne, I do think it's a little bit closer maybe than it gets credit for.
What about you, Tommy?
It's interesting. I think Njoku gives you permission to trim down your tight end position in this format, whereas ETN is another number in hopefully like a high volume rostership headcount, you know? And so if you need to reconstruct your roster, I really like the idea of getting into Njoku and getting rid of Davis Allen and all of his contemporaries, right? Filling that with running backs, like reorganizing your team a little bit. So I think it opens up a lot of optionality in a vacuum. I think ETN is probably going to score more points, but the injury risk is a little higher as well at that position. What about you, Rock?
Yeah, well, Frank gave us a little comment on this because he was very much working on the sheet, even though he wasn't going to be here tonight. He says ETN by a mile. He's a noted ETN stan. But I actually kind of agree with them here. I guess part of it's I always lean towards the points when I look at these trades, especially if we're not talking some elite, dynasty value on the other side either. I am actually a bit of a believer in Fannin too. So that kind of turns me off in Njoku a little bit as well. And even if Njoku has more long-term staying power, he's never going to be one of those elite guys anyway. And I don't know that Travis Etienne is an elite running back, but I think you're going to get higher-end production, at least for this one season, than you will maybe ever get out of Njoku again. So that's kind of why I lean that way. But I maybe not by a mile, but I'm closer to Frank than I think you two guys are. So, but let's get to our bigger trade. This was a blockbuster. I think this just happened today, actually, earlier today. And somebody put in the chat, WTF, what the fuck? Well, I'm not going to say it for Frank. I won't say it. But what the bleep just happened, and the person who made the trade answered content creation, which I loved.
There you go.
Which is exactly what we're going to get into here. So we got some content. But anyway, six pieces here, so pay attention. Lamar Jackson, Tucker Kraft, well, Quinn Ewers. I don't know why he's in there. But for Brian Thomas Jr., Brock Bowers, and a 26 first, which, if you're curious, looks kind of mid-ish to me, like borderline playoff team-ish. So, Herms, what do you got? How do you break this down? What do you got?
I know how expensive quarterbacks are in trade addicts leagues. Like, it's definitely hard to get those deals done. So, like, man, you got to send a lot. I get that for sure. But, like, man, BTJ, Brock Bowers, and a first is just such a good package. And, you know, like, I've harped a ton on the whole, you know, tight end premium aspect of this, but, like, Brock Bowers, to me, I think on, like, a relative positional basis is still the most valuable piece involved here. So, like, there are a lot of superstar big names involved, but in that situation, whoever gets the biggest piece is just who I'm going to default to. So that, and also getting a first out of it's pretty cool.
I am actually with you here. Normally, even though I'm not like the guy who buys the elite quarterbacks, I have a hard time like seeing moving off one of them unless you're getting something ridiculous. And I kind of think this is ridiculous. You do get Tucker Kraft, which is not something to Scott. Like, you're getting Tucker Kraft as well, which is not a minor piece. But me and Frank is kind of like always like poking me a little bit about this, about how high I have Brock Bowers ranked in terms of non-quarterbacks. I think I had him like four or something like that. Like, even like out of every, like Jefferson, Jay, all that, I had him four or five in tight end premium leagues. I just love the guy. And like you said, I think he's just a huge piece. He's going to be a difference maker for years. To me, it was like you're getting Travis Kelce, you know, back when he was a rookie or a second year guy. So, and Brian Thomas Jr. is basically like a top five ish dynasty value wide receiver. And you're getting a mid first, like you said. I think this is what you have to do to get Lamar Jackson, and I'm okay with it. I feel Tommy's going to totally disagree with us because he loves the elite quarterbacks. And I would have a hard time moving Lamar Jackson and not getting a quarterback back, but I do think the value's there. What about you, Tommy?
It's such – all right, so this is so league-dependent, and we're talking about trade addicts leagues, right? In a traditional, like, super flex start 10 where you've got, you know, two running backs, three wide receivers, some flexes, super flex. I would probably lean the Lamar Jackson side, to be honest with you. But in this format with all flexes, it really opens up the ways in which you can use Brock Bowers, who's probably, I mean, at a point per game expectation of what, 25, 26 points per game and 1.75 tight end premium. Lamar Jackson at the height of his superpowers is probably 28 to 30 points. So they're within spitting distance of each other, right? And so then you go down to the next tier. And I think the market at large is underrating what Tucker Kraft is and could be. All of those metrics that I was talking about before, like route participation, yards per route run, all that nerdy stuff, I compiled all that into a 1 to 10 score. Tucker Kraft is performing at near a wide receiver 1/wide receiver 2 level in this format. He is an elite player, an elite asset. The problem is Brock Bowers is performing essentially as the wide receiver 1 overall with his underlying metrics. And so he's a superhero. Like, there's two superheroes here, right? They have very similar runways, I think, for the rest of their careers. Like, you have long-term expectations for a lot of these players. You get into Brian Thomas. I'm a Jacksonville Jaguars fan. They are just skewering him. The media, the fans, everyone is upset with Brian Thomas because of his effort. He's been a shit blocker. Excuse me. He's been a bad blocker. He has alligator armed passes. He hasn't completed routes. The effort hasn't been there, which is really weird to see because he was like a model wide receiver his rookie year. He was the type of wide receiver that you would put on film and say, do this, young players, like follow this guy's lead. And I don't know what's going on. I don't know if anybody knows what's going on. And we're about to see, I think, the let's pepper this guy with 40 targets in a game. I'm being a little bit ridiculous, but I think that is going to come and you're going to see the rubber banding of Brian Thomas Jr.'s value. And I think it's going to show in this trade a month from now to be the difference. The first is great as well. Might as well pocket a first, but I think it's the Brian Thomas value gain that we're about to see that's really going to push this one over the edge.
Oh, wow. So Tommy did take the same side that we were taking. I'm surprised. Frank actually said, take the QB side. I'm not off BTJ yet, but Lamar's side has a ton of upside. So Frank's the only one that disagrees with any of us. So moving on to TA3, smaller deal again, Nick Chubb and Hollywood Brown for 27 second. So basically kind of probably contender and team that's looking to start the rebuild. Getting two little, you know, get two decent pieces that aren't going to go up in value much, if ever. What about you, Herbert? Are you paying that for those two pieces for your playoff, you know, for your 2025 run?
I mean, sure. You know, why not? I mean, like, kind of like you were saying, the value is never really going to go up for either of them, especially Nick Chubb being, you know, as old as he is at this point. Yeah. But yeah, dude, if you're going for it, why not? And if you're one of those, if you're one of those managers that like hasn't really gone through your bench in a while and you're not really contending, just check and see who you have, because these are the types of things you can get done. Any sort of spare piece that you have that's like randomly going off, just get rid of them. Do it.
What about you, Tommy?
Yeah, so the 27 first is kind of savvy because neither Hollywood Brown nor Nick Chubb is likely to be producing any points in 2027. And not only that, but you get the two roster spots. And I think those are valuable. Like, can you find a way to get future production or value out of those two roster spots that you've just opened up to where you can get a third or something? I think you can start to compound the runway that you've created by opening that space up. I looked at TA6, a league that I'm in, and I see folks like Raheem Sanders, Hunter Renfrow, AJ Dillon, Kevontae Turpin, Ray McLeod. I think there's going to be opportunities to grab players like that, that maybe you can cash out in the future. I kind of like that idea.
Yeah. And I'm with you guys. I think it's a fair deal on either side. I am perfectly fine with sending the second if I'm contending. But I agree with you. I think it's a good idea, Tommy, that if you're going to move these guys to try and package them together, because I don't know if anyone wants to pay a second for either of them by themselves, but you put them together and you get that 27 second. So yeah, I mean, I think it's a perfectly fine deal. I again, probably lean the points just because I always lean the points. But if I had to pick a side, but I basically think it's a fair deal.
Totally.
And Frank says meh. So in case you were wondering out there. Okay, moving on to TAA. This was Russ. This was Russ. Justin Herbert and Chris Olave for Joe Burrow and Jaden Higgins. I do want to preface there. You're going to see multiple Bengals trades coming up here. All of these were done prior to the weekend. So maybe we look at them through that lens instead of the Joe Burrow is now after 3 months lens. So yeah. Herms, what do you think?
I mean, okay. If the Los Angeles Chargers are going to stick by doing this whole, you know, air it out and like keep up this whole pass rate thing, then I think the gap between Herbert and Burrow is actually fairly close. And at that point, it comes down to the receiver I like more. So I kind of would prefer Chris Olave and the Justin Herbert side. I think it's actually a pretty stellar deal if you're starting to believe in the whole Herbert revival. Because like he did get better toward the end of last year, too. And the fact that they're still continuing to attack through the air as much as they are, pass rate over expectation, I think, you know, they're pretty high up in the league through 2 weeks already. Like, it's something, man. It's something.
Tommy, you on the Herbert side or the Burrow side here?
Yeah, so I was of the position that Justin Herbert could outscore Joe Burrow when healthy this year anyway. And so I really dig this deal. Very much pro Justin Herbert. We almost forget how good he's been in the past. His rookie year, he was QB10 overall. His second year, he was QB2. Like, this is pretty reasonably in his range of outcomes to finish as a top five guy.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I am a notorious Olave hater, but I agree that I just don't think. And if you love Higgins, I can see it a little bit more. But I just think, like you guys said, that the gap between Herbert and Burrow isn't huge. And especially if they're going to let him throw the ball around a little more. We were very worried last year when Harbaugh came in. There was just going to be run, run, run all the time. But we've seen some good stuff from Herbert, especially the beginning of this year, but even going back to last year in terms of getting opportunities to throw it around. And like I said, I don't love Olave, but it's a big enough add-on to Herbert for me. I'd probably prefer a different piece, but Russ loves Olave. He got Olave in the deal, Olave and Herbert. So I agree with you, too. I go with the Herbert side. And Frank is disagreeing with us all night tonight, even though he's not here, because he took the Burrow side. He says, I like getting out of a lobby while getting targets, and Burrow at full health is better, which we're not disagreeing with that. But anyway, we'll move on to another Bengal trade. This one was actually Frank. And so maybe I'll read his comment first after I read the trade. But the trade is Jamar Chase for 326 firsts. I will say, and I put this on the sheet, they're likely all playoff first. They are currently the three teams with the most points in the league, which is through two games, so grain of salt. But they look like pretty good teams. And Frank said he gets Chase here. He said this was partially for the content, but my team is outperforming expectations so far and don't have a lot of Chase, so figured it was worth it. Was it worth it, Herms?
Ah, dude. Okay. I don't have a ton of Chase either, but I have been offered a lot of things for Chase in the past, and I've never felt comfortable selling him because he's one of those guys that's like in this weird tier for me that like, okay, you're going to have to completely overwhelm me or I'm just going to have to say no. Partially because, like, I don't know, that kind of value just is pretty rare. And then also, I just don't want to get flamed if I sell for too little because, you know, the chat's going to blow up and make fun of you. And that's just, you know, I don't need that smoke. I don't need that in my life. So I've mostly kept Jamar Chase. But, like, yeah, dude, I mean, three firsts is one of those things. Like, it's a lot, but it's not what I consider a godfather deal, per se. So if you can get Chase for that, go for it, man.
Yeah, you look at the reveal. So the first couple weeks of the season, 2 or 3 weeks of the season, tell like 40% of the story for the final standings in your league. It's tough to hear if you're one of the 0-2, 0-3 teams, but good teams tend to do good early. And buying Chase when you are one of those good teams sets you up for a buy. I like taking the big swings because if you can be one of the top two teams in your league and you can get the buy, your chances at winning a championship, of making money go up exponentially. I don't mind making the big bet with elite players either. If Chase, unfortunately, let's say, was out for 3 months like his quarterback, what would you guys pay for him in terms of future draft capital? Not much less than this, right? Two firsts and something else, maybe?
Yeah, pretty much.
So what are you really risking? You're risking one first here.
Yeah, I'm with both of you. We say it all the time on here that, like, if you're trading a stud to, I want to get a significant player back in the deal, not just all picks. There's a lot of risk in picks if you keep them. You can then move them for other players, of course, but then, you know, who knows what that's going to be. And do I want to break down? Do I even want to break down Chase and three players or something like that that are only going to be worth them for? I don't know, but. I would much rather have Chase than just I would probably pay this if I had three, which most leagues I don't have three firsts, but if I did, I would probably pay this for Chase and, you know, be happy that I will have him for the next probably 10 years. Like, cause like Herms, I have a couple, I have more, I don't know if I have any Chase, but I have a few Jefferson shares and I just don't see me like ever moving them unless, like you said, I just get something ridiculous. And it's just nice to have that guy that you just know it's awesome and you're plugging in every week. So, yeah, I agree. This is the Chase side for me too. TA9, another Jamar Chase trade. This is what we're finishing up with. It's our last one. This was also Russ, Jamar Chase and Keandre Lambert Smith for Rashee Rice, Devontae Smith, and a 27 first. Start with you again, Herms.
Well, I'm not going to lie. I don't really remember who Keandre Lambert Smith is. So that means nothing to me as part of the deal.
He's a rookie Charger? Am I right on that? Does anyone know? I think so. He's a rookie somewhere.
Well, good for him. I hope it works out for him.
If it's points per name, he's doing really well.
Yeah. Oh, that's very true. He definitely has that going for him, if nothing else. So either way, like Jamar Chase for Rashee Rice, Devontae Smith in the first is pretty much how I'm looking at that. And man, I mean, kind of like I was saying before, like I really need the whole like Godfather deal to move Jamar Chase. And I don't know that. I mean, I'm a big believer in Rashee Rice. I think the fact that the Chiefs offense looks kind of meh without him really inspires me based off of like how important I think his chain moving role is in the offense. So like, I'm weirdly very optimistic about what's going to happen when he comes back. But like the Eagles are just passing at such a low volume. I mean, I don't know, Rocky, I'd rather almost hear from you about the Devontae Smith part of it, because I feel like the Eagles offense in general, like there's a lot of people complaining about the offensive coordinator, Kevin Petullo, doing all the new stuff, taking over play calling. Like you're the authority there. So I don't know.
I thought they were going to be passing. I talked about this a lot of the non-points green season that I thought they'd be passing more than they are. And it looks like it's just going to be a lot of the same, especially since it's working these first two. Well, working enough to win anyway. They're not exactly lighting it up offensively. But yeah, I don't know what to. I do think it's going to perk up for Devontae Smith and AJ Brown, and we're going to have much better days ahead. I don't necessarily think it's going to be wildly different than last year, but last year was pretty good. It's just it was definitely not as bad as it's been the first 2 weeks for the passing game with the Eagles. So I think we're going to see more of that down the road. But in terms of this trade itself, like this is basically what I was just saying about the last trade where you're turning those firsts into play. Like, to me, Rashee Rice is a first. Devontae Smith is a first. And then you have the 27 first. And again, I would do that. And I really like both of the players. I'm with you, Herms. I'm very optimistic about Rice when he comes back. I mean, obviously, he probably have to shake off some rust, but we saw he can be a target hog.
Oh yeah,
and I think he's going to be great in PPR leagues, and obviously the number one target there. So I do like the players, but it's still not enough for me not to give them up for Chase.
It's a directional play, though, isn't it, Rocky? Like this gets into like philosophically how you construct teams, in my opinion. Do you chase elite players and build more fragility onto your team, knowing full well the risk of what you're doing? So by moving Rashee Rice, Devontae Smith, and a first 2 years from now, you're saying depth be damned. Give me the elite player. Give me the upside. Give me the variance. I'm pushing my chips in on fewer assets, right? And if I fail, what happens? A coveted 2027 first could be early. That's where you can lose big. But in the meantime, you can win really big. When you have just a handful, I mean, not even a handful, if you have three elite players on your team and a bunch of scrubs, you have essentially superpowers on your team. All you need is folks to be average and you let these superpowers shine. That's what you're doing when you get Ja'Marr Chase, when you sell your depth in this way. You take on a little bit of risk, but you're embracing a lot of upside and you're chasing a 1 out of 12 outcome. I really like that type of structure.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Well said. And yeah, I mean, I definitely agree that I think in general, you know, everything is, you know, dependent on leagues, teams, settings, all that stuff. But in general, you should, I think, be trying to make tier up trades like this from a Devontae Smith and Rashee Rice to get a Chase.
Yep.
Frank also agrees with us on this one. He likes the, hey, he likes the Chase side. He likes Rice as much as the next guy. But he's admittedly a bit of a Smith hater, not enough for Chase.
You should have lied, Rocky. You should have given him that. Just
made him disagree again. but okay, so now that takes us to our listener questions. The first one comes from some guy named Frank in the chat. he says, what the heck do we do with the Seahawks running backs? Someone tell me Ken Walker is back after last week's performance, because we were talking, I think that was prior to the show. I think it was just before we started recording. We were talking how Frank is a big Ken Walker stan. So, and Herms, you were kind of on that train too, right?
I mean, I was a Ken Walker hater for, you know, at least his dynasty value for a really long time, because he wasn't much of a pass catcher. But, like, I don't know, once they hired Clint Kubiak and I just knew the kind of offense he was going to get into, I just, like, changed my tune so much and was like, you know what? Let's go Ken Walker, baby. It's going to be super fun. And, yeah, I mean, the work week one kind of scared me for sure, obviously. And, you know, it was nice to see him bounce back against – I mean, I will say, though, the Pittsburgh defensive line is just – absolutely horrible. Listeners, if you have a running back going up against the Pittsburgh Steelers at any point for the rest of this year, just put them in your lineup. It's going to work like a charm. Like, honestly, probably going to be one of my favorite matchups to exploit all season. But, like, the interesting thing to remember, though, is Charbonnet still got more of a snap share in week two, and they're still kind of splitting it. So, like, it's a dub for Ken Walker, I guess, but this is a committee whether we want it to be or not. So you kind of just have to deal with that. And if you're cool with it, then heck yeah. But, you know, hopefully you didn't spend too much in either direction or whatever and, you know, kind of screw yourself from a value standpoint. But, yeah, I mean, it should all work out. I think it'll be fine. And I think both Charbonnet and Walker could carry some viability throughout the year.
I agree that they'll have viability, but in terms of answering my answer for the question, what the heck do we do with the Seahawks running backs? My answer is stay away. Because like you said, it is a committee, because I'm still not a fan of that Seattle offense. I've been saying that all year. I still don't like Sam Darnold. I still don't love their line. And I just don't really want pieces of that offense who are not named Jackson Smith and Jigba. So that's basically what it is for me. I have no Walker shares. I have a couple Charbonnet shares that I'm just holding. If Walker were to go down, maybe I would try and sell those.
Yeah.
But I'm definitely not that interested in acquiring. But what about you, Tommy?
I think we're back, Rocky, where you and I don't agree on anything. This is great. I am buying this backfield. I think we've seen a reprioritization of not just running the football with the running backs, but scheming targets, making that like a central core component of modern NFL offenses. Both of these guys are pretty good pass catchers, right? And so you're making the bet, is JSN going to have a 45% target share for the entire year? It's possible. That would be really, really high. I would like to bet against that. And the way to bet against that in this offense, in my opinion, is to bet on the running backs catching passes at pretty good volume. Each one of the running backs, Charbonnet has always been underpriced, in my opinion. Ken Walker is seeing a dip in his value, or a softening, at least in the stance of the managers who are rostering him. I mean, us included, we're all saying, like, yeah, I was pretty worried about this last week. That means there's some accessibility in the market, right? Like, buy. It's a high risk bet. Know what you're buying, but buy, because there's pretty good upside with both of these bets. And I want to have a decent exposure to both of them.
Yes, we definitely do disagree on that one. I'll move on to the next question, which is from Jonathan Smith at DFF underscore S Jonathan 02, who definitely chimes in from time to time. And he asks, what do we do with AJ Brown? So kind of a similar question, and kind of what we were getting into with Smith. I kind of commented on that, so I'll let you guys talk here. But he also, Frank asked, what's your favorite Robert Redford movie, since he just passed away? And Jonathan says his favorite Redford movies are The Sting and Butch and the Sundance Kid, which is, he says, yes, a tie. Tommy, what are we doing with AJ Brown?
You're making him prove it, unfortunately. I don't trust the underlying metrics right now. We know historically that this is an elite performer on high efficiency, right? He doesn't need volume to be excellent, to be a league breaker. But right now, he is not that player. We have to wait. We have to hold. We have to see him do it once before we can confidently put him in our lineups. And that's a difficult thing to do as a contender. Like, you have to backfill this position with, I was seeing Tyreek Hill go for seconds. Like, do something like that so that you can give AJ Brown the runway that he needs to round back into whatever shape he needs to be to command targets again, to change the way that the offense looks. The Eagles are not going to change their offense unless it is forced to change. AJ Brown has that gravitational force. He can make the Eagles change the offense through his performance, because if he is performing at his peak capacities, they don't have a choice but to start to funnel the ball to these outside wide receivers. What about you, Herms?
I mean, yeah, if you have AJ Brown, you have AJ Brown because AJ Brown is good. That is why he is on your team. Like, just stick with it, man. I don't know. He's been really good ever since he's been in Philadelphia. And if we are kind of worried about this whole passing volume thing, like, this is something that I got into in an article that I wrote over the summer about the fact that, like, that's what happened last year. And he was still like a borderline wide receiver one, like every week. They did regress in their passing already. So, like, we've seen it. It's not like this is going to be super different. I mean, obviously different offensive coordinator. I think their play calling has been like a little less creative over the first couple of weeks than it was, you know, with Kellen Moore in town, but like, I don't know, still largely similar to what was taking place before. So like, however you felt before is kind of how you should feel now.
Rocky, this has to be somewhat injury related too, right?
They haven't said that, but he was definitely banged up through the entire preseason. I think that's part of it. I think some of it is just that they didn't even like practice together very much during the preseason. Just getting back that timing and all that, like you saw that one pass, if you watched the game where you probably saw it on highlights where he kind of threw it behind him and AJ was kind of slipping and then he just reaches up and grabs it with one hand, but it wasn't a great pass. So the timing is not there. I think you'll see that evolve. I think you'll also see Petullo evolve throughout the season, hopefully. I think very soon we're going to get like a, you know, kind of greasy wheel kind of game. If it's not against the Rams, it might be the following week against the Bucks, where they just pepper AJ Brown with like 12 targets or something, just because he hasn't been getting the ball enough. So I think it's going to come. I think you're going to see it. And like you both said, he's efficient. I don't expect it appears from the first two games that they're not going to pass much more than last year, as I thought they might. So barring maybe Barkley, you know, God forbid, going down or something like that. I don't think you can depend on volume, but like we said, he doesn't necessarily need increased volume or a huge amount of volume to produce. So definitely. Yeah. I mean, I'm not, if you can get it to press value, I don't mind buying AJ Brown right now. I don't know that anybody is off of just these first two games, you know, selling him cheap or anything like that, but I definitely would be holding on to him. And unlike Tommy, I think I'm probably still starting him, just anticipating that this it's going to end soon. So, I mean, if it gets to three or four games, then I might start thinking about sitting him. But I'm still sticking him in my lineup. And I'm in terms of buying, selling, all that stuff, I'm definitely not selling. And I'm holding or even acquiring if you can get him cheaper because someone's pissed off about it. So, okay, so that brings us to our Dynastud list because he always has a bunch of questions for us. And kind of more, it's kind of a lot of these questions are on the same theme of, you know, guys who are starting slow or starting well. What hot starts are you buying and which are you trying to cash out on if you can? He gives examples of Renfro and Wandale. And I suppose the opposite question matters too. Any players whose slow starts you're not bothered by, but their owners might be such that it's a real buy low opportunity. We just potentially mentioned one if anyone is worried about AJ Brown, but I guess both questions. Right? I guess we can start with the last one first. Is there any slow starts you're not bothered by that you'd be looking to maybe buy?
I mean, I think there are people who are like legitimately worried about some of these rookie running backs just across the league. If there is any sort of, you know, hesitation buying opportunity for any of those guys, I'm talking Travion Henderson, I'm talking Ashton Gentry, I'm talking Amari and Hampton, like a lot of these guys. Caleb
it's
Johnson,
that all really of them wanna... started so like this. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, I did not think that it was going to end up being that bad. But at the same time, like, if you look under the hood, like, people who look into the stats and stuff are going to notice, like, okay, like, they're, like, I mean, aside from Henderson, like, Gentry and Hampton, like, they're getting, like, majority work shares. They're getting all of the volume. They're getting the necessary underlying stuff going in their direction. It's just going to take a little bit for that to, you know, sort of pan out. Things happen sometimes. It's a two-week sample. But if people are just looking only at the surface level, only at the box score and losing their mind, buy any of them. Just buy any of them. Like, I'd even dumpster dive with Caleb Johnson if you really want to. I think he's going to matter eventually. It's just going to take a super long time. But, like, he's a pretty good running back, too. Just, like, that's what I would be buying if people are worried about it.
It's a great call, Herms. Yeah, rookie running backs are – it's honestly a blessing for us as dynasty managers. We don't take it as such, like – take these running backs in phases. There are players that you need to start right now. There's players that are going to need to be started in the midpoint of the season, and there's going to be late season heroes. A lot of those tend to be rookies, right? And to shift to the wide receiver position, I think Trey Harris is one of those players that's going to come on later. We talked about Justin Herbert. He's been a wide receiver kingmaker. He elevates wide receivers. Josh Palmer was good with Justin Herbert, right? QJ. Right. Like, he's good. Like,
say, we're seeing it with him right now. Yeah.
It is amazing what Herbert is able to do. And we're starting to see increased snap share with Trey Harris. So he's somebody that I'm interested. Another rookie, Cam Ward, somebody I'm not willing to give up on, not even necessarily because of performance or analytics or anything like that. All you have to do is look at something like KTC historically. Year over year, rookie quarterbacks gain value in January. They don't even have to play. J.J. McCarthy gained value in January last year. They can be terrible, and they will gain value. Buy Cam Ward on a dip if you can. Get Jackson Dart before he gets in the game if you can. These rookies are going to ascend in value, and it's value that you can use elsewhere, right? Like, I'm negotiating a deal to get Joe Burrow using Cam Ward right now. Who would have thought a week ago that that would have been possible? But those are the two centerpieces of the deal. That's what you need to do is get in on those types of profiles now. I mean, if you're looking for production right now, Justin Jefferson, if you can get any sort of accessibility to him, it's not even like a buy low, but an ability to buy, and Brian Thomas Jr. as well.
Yeah, I agree with all that. I was trying to look at, because you guys were talking about a lot of younger guys. I was trying to look at some vet, like, Mike Evans is a guy who's going to be cheap anyway and is not producing through the first two games. And I don't think that holds up. So I think he's someone you could definitely get like super cheap if you're trying to just get points and not dynasty value. He's
How
the one
Keenan
that
Keenan Allen. Keenan Allen's a great vet as well. You can get
actually, yeah.
a couple thirds.
But he's actually started well, so
yeah. Oh, that's true. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. the other guy, but it's funny you mentioned that. The other guy I was looking at was not an older guy. But I've not even been a fan of this guy, but I can't imagine. I don't know how much his price is coming down off of two games. But Ladd McConkey has gotten off to a bit of a slow start, too. And QJ and Keenan both have played well. And I just can't see QJ outproducing Ladd McConkey full season. So I feel like that's going to flip at some point. So if you can get any kind of discount on him, I don't mind that. Like I said, I've never been a huge McConkey guy. But it's just, like I said, I just don't buy Quentin Johnson even more. So, I feel like you could probably, if you can get a discount on McConkey, now would be the time to do it, to try and get him. So, the other question he had was, what hot starts are you buying and what you trying to cash out on if you can? I will say one that I'm buying, and again, this isn't dynasty long-term value really, but and it may partially be my bias, but Javonte Williams, I like for a long term for the 25 season. I liked him coming in. I always thought he was going to be the lead guy here, and he's definitely been that. I think I know Blue was inactive week. Was he inactive week two as well?
He was.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, and that was a lot of people's concern. A lot of people like Jaden Blue. Right now, it's basically him and Miles Sanders. So I am not concerned one bit about Miles Sanders, and I'm sure Jaden Blue will get time as the year goes on, but he looks good. I didn't see a lot of the Giants game, but I know week one against the Eagles, he was pushing piles. He was playing well. And he's definitely going to be their touchdown guy. And they look like they're going to be, with Dak, as we expected, a pretty decent offense with the receiving pieces he also has around them too. So, I think Javonte is a guy that I think is for real, and probably won't cost you a ton. I guess people, like, because of his early production, or might be trying to push for like a first. I don't know that I necessarily want to pay a first, but maybe some kind of package you can throw him in or something like that. But what about you, Tommy? Is there a hot start that you're buying, or somebody that you're trying to cash out on if you can?
So I looked into this last year, and I looked up the top KTC value gainers in September of 2024. Those were Malik Nabers, Jaden Daniels, Rashi Rice, Brock Bowers, Saquon Barkley. Top five. Those are all players that we would very happily roster today, right? And so I think if you're tracking like who you should buy, this is one time where KTC gets it right, is the huge value gainers in September when the season starts, right? Those are players that, I mean, three of them were rookies. That helped their insulate their value. Mm-hmm. But it was foreboding of a lot of performance, a lot of points, right? A lot of utility for these assets. And so KTC is such a flawed database, but at the very top, I think it's probably pretty good. So if you can vamp for me just a little bit, I'd be happy to pull up the top five value gainers, and maybe we can vet out one or two of them.
Yeah, yeah, I can go real quickly with mine just because.
Sure. There you go.
Coming into the NFL, I was really not a big Wandale Robinson guy because I was like, he's like 5'8". Like, how's this ever going to work? I'm not interested at all. But then it started working. And then as it turns out, I weirdly became the Wandale Robinson guy in a lot of my leagues because, like, I don't know. Who else are they going to throw to besides Malik Nabers? Like, I'm completely buying all of that. Like, it made sense last year. There wasn't really a reason to stop throwing to him. So, like, yeah, dude, wheels up for Wandale. It's a free PPR floor every single week. Just go for it, man. It's fun. Do it.
Totally. I'm with you.
All right, we got this top five. It's Bill Kroski Merritt, Travis Etienne, Jake Browning, Harold Fannin, Tucker Kraft. We've already, I think, had a full discussion around Tucker Kraft. Harold Fannin is somebody that I put out what I thought was a bold take last week, that I thought Harold Fannin could be in the same value tier as George Kittle a month from now. George Kittle going on IR. We don't really know when he's coming back. A thirsty dynasty community for the next great tight end that is backed up by pretty strong underlying metrics. Herms, is that crazy? Or do you think that there's some legs to this? Do you think that KTC is getting this right? Are we supposed to be in on Harold Fannin Jr.?
I think they're onto something here. I was definitely skeptical of Fannin just with his prospect profile, because it's like, he's like more of an H-back than he is like a traditional inline tight end. Right? And projecting a specialty role in an offense is such a difficult thing to do. But Kevin Stefanski is clearly okay giving him a specialty role in the offense. Like, that's what's so difficult with prospects like this that are kind of those weird tweeners. But as long as the Browns seemingly have a plan to work him and Njoku in complementary roles out there doing 12 personnel crazy stuff, it's going to work, and I think it's going to be cool. So, like, I have really, really changed my tune on the Fannin thing. And I, you know, all my redraft leagues, I picked him up, the whole thing. Like, I'm interested. I really am. I think there's I think they're onto something.
What about you, Rocky?
Yeah, I'm with you. I especially with the Kittle injury, like you said, his value is only going to go down. And I am on the Fannin train as well. Like, I didn't know a lot about Fannin. I'd heard the name. Obviously, I heard other people talk about him. I didn't know much about him personally, but yeah, I like what I'm seeing. He's getting significant targets in that offense. I'm pretty excited about the guy. I don't have a lot of him in Dynasty. I actually picked him up in my redraft league where, funny enough, I had only George Kittle as my tight end. So
hey!
I replaced him with Harold Fannin, and it worked out well last week. I won. So,
nice.
But anyway, yeah, I'm on board. I might be trying to get some more Fannin shares here before he potentially blows up even more. I guess one more thing before we move on to the next question. Is there anyone that you're, I guess, not, that you're trying to cash out on if you can? We didn't really get to that part. We did mention Quentin Johnston, which I think is probably a good one. Another name that came to mind, but I'm not even I guess I don't know what you can get for him, and I'm not even sure this isn't somewhat real, at least for this season, but Daniel Jones is an interesting one to me.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if I want to cash out if I have. Yeah, I do have a couple shares of Daniel Jones, where if I'm actually, because I'm a big Shane Steichen guy, who was the offensive coordinator in Philadelphia before he went to go coach for the Colts. And he's a really good quarterback guy, and he's a pretty good play caller. And we did see Daniel Jones, look good for a whole year, a couple years ago with the Giants. Which is not a great offensive environment, like, ever. I'm not even saying I want to cash. I actually want to get your guys' opinion. Is this somebody we should be cashing out on, or is this someone that we should at least ride for 2025 on our contending teams?
Man, I mean, they're getting him design runs closer, like, into the red zone and stuff, too. Like, that's the really cool part about Daniel Jones. Like, really tailoring it toward all the stuff that he's good at is like you were saying, like, that's the magic of Shane Steichen. Like, I think it's just a really good match between coach and quarterback, to the point that I am absolutely willing to just keep it going, dude. Like, especially if he's going to do that crucial rushing component. We love the runny boys. You love all that stuff. It's going to get you extra points every single week. So, like, yeah, dude, as long as that's cooking, I'm staying on it.
What about you, Tommy?
Do you guys remember the Office episode where Dwight trades like a paperclip or whatever and gets a telescope? He does like a dozen different trades, and eventually he gets the magic legumes, right?
Yeah.
Daniel Jones is an avenue to the telescope. I think that if you want to use him, you know, what did you pay for Daniel Jones? A third round pick coming into the season, maybe, you know? Right now, like, can you package him with something? I'm not saying like buy low, fleece somebody, but can you package him with something to get into JJ McCarthy to then get into something else? Like, I think that the injury landscape at quarterback right now facilitates the movement of Daniel Jones in ways that people probably would have laughed at a week or two ago.
I buy that.
Yeah, that's a good way to go there too. Okay, asking because I know Tommy B is a fellow Mark Andrews fan.
Oh, no. Are we doing this, Rocky?
Another slow start. How worried are we about his slow start? I know he did this last year, and finished out great, but can we really depend on another 11 TDs? He used to be a McBride-level target for Lamar, and those days seem to be gone. So, Tommy, obviously this one's I'm throwing this to you.
Thanks, man. I'm not worried. You're worried. All right, let's pull him up. After two games, 70% target share, or excuse me, route participation. That's really, really good at the tight end position. He's out on the field. He's in the route tree. 0.1 targets per route run. That's friggin' horrible. That's like Grant Calcaterra levels. Yards per route run, 0.18. We want to be around 2 yards per route run. He's at 0.18. So,
ballpark, you know, somewhere in it.
Not encouraging. However, first read, 11, almost 12% of the time, he's out there getting opportunities. He's dropping the football. He's blocking. I don't know what to do with him. I think anybody who says they know what to do with Mark Andrews is probably overconfident or lying. There's a really wide range of outcomes with Mark Andrews because we've seen it with him multiple times. Is he slower? Maybe a little bit. His route running isn't horrible. He has not traditionally been plagued by drops. Is this a small sample size issue? The optimistic side of me wants to say so, but the yards per route run tells me that this is just not a central component of this offense. Zay Flowers is way outkicking his talent right now, way outkicking his talent. And so there are going to be targets spread elsewhere, somewhere. I see a burgeoning rapport with DeAndre Hopkins, though. I think that is probably the next likely number two. Or maybe likely, Isaiah Likely. So I have concerns, and I think they're legitimate. However, I'm not cutting him. I'm not bailing on him because there's nothing to bail to or from. He's very, very low valued at this point. And so if you have him, be prepared to make roster and lineup decisions with him on a weekly basis, right? He can't be your only tight end in a non-premium format anymore. Do you agree, Hermes? Yes.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, like what are you doing if you're trying to get rid of him? Like there's no upside to that. You know, your only avenue is just like sticking by it, man. You have to see where it goes. And is it a little bit concerning that this is happening without Isaiah Likely on the field yet? Like, sure, but it's also two games. And like, I know people really like to go super hard into like the sunk cost fallacy, blah, blah, blah. But it's 2 weeks, okay? It's 2 weeks. We got plenty of time. And like you were saying, he's at least out there. That is the number one thing that people have to remember. Even if your player, regardless of whatever position they're playing, is starting slow, like if they're out there and they're getting the participation, that matters, and that eventually translates into fantasy points. You can't score if you're not out there participating. So like, I don't know, law of averages, etc., bunch of math stuff, just stick by Mark Andrews. It'll probably work out a little bit better than it has been.
I think you both pretty much said it all. I just want to reemphasize what Herm said at the end there. It is two games. We do this every year with like the first few games. This guy's starting slow, that guy's starting fast, and most of these guys tend to rise or sink to their normal level. And then it literally happened with this same exact player last year. Everyone was worried about Mark Andrews in the month of September in 2024 too. So yeah, and like you said, there's no upside to getting out, really. Like, what are you getting? Maybe a second, maybe. So yeah, I don't see the point in not just like waiting for it to turn around, and it probably will, at least to some extent. I mean, he's, you know, maybe like he said, he doesn't get 11 touchdowns like last year, but I think you're still going to see much, much more than a point or two a week, which he's gotten so far. So yeah. And then we got our final question from Dynastud. Assuming no league suspension, is Judkins now valued even more highly than he was in rookie drafts? If you'd have told me that he'd have 3 receptions in his first game on a 27% snap share, I'd have been confused by elated. He looked awesome. So what do you think, Herms?
I mean, I don't know why people ding Judkins in value to begin with, because we're talking about, you know, calling back to earlier, like rookie running backs, like, it's typically a position where you're going to peak in the second half of the season anyway. So if all we were worried about was Judkins missing time and getting acclimated at the beginning of the season, where most other rookie running backs are struggling anyway, then why did that matter? You know, like that was something I wasn't ever even thinking about that. I was just basing my Judkins valuation based off of what it was prior to the whole off-field thing. Like, obviously, I don't, you know, condone any of that stuff. I'm not going to get into that. But, like, you know, from a football standpoint, from a dynasty standpoint, he was a really good prospect. They used a super high pick on him, and it's an offense that historically, under this head coach, wants to just run the piss out of the ball. So that all adds up to being a pretty good running back, man. I don't know. I was always in this mindset with him.
Yeah, and I think most rookies are just valued even more highly than they were in rookie drafts once they just start getting on the field and doing anything. So I think that's the case, especially for him because of the concern about the off-field stuff. I think a lot of any declining value that happened was just concern that he would even get on the field. Now that that's happened, I definitely think he's worth more than what he was, you know, like a late first round. I don't think anyone's just selling him for a first. Now that you got him on the field. So I was not as big a Judkins guy as some people, but I agree he did look very good in the time that he did get this week. I don't see how you can think anything else. But Tommy, what are your thoughts on this before we finish up?
This is the type of asset where the market almost doesn't matter, because what happened is you drafted him, and then there was a reshuffling of the deck, right? I had 0 shares after my rookie drafts. After the news broke, I got 10 shares from the managers that were willing to move off of Judkins. And I wasn't like stealing Judkins. I was paying a fair price for him, right? I couldn't get the other 20 shares of Judkins because the managers were invested in Judkins, right? I wasn't going to sell him because I was invested in him. The market did not reflect the individual owners of this one asset, right? And so prying him away is more difficult than what a trade calculator might say. And so is he worth more? Probably, but I think he's probably a stuck asset as well for a while, for probably the next 3 or 4 weeks before we start to see a typical volume for what his profile might say.
Yep, agree with all that. Okay, but that is the end of our show sheet. So that is the end of our show. I do want to thank both Herms and Tommy. Frank showed up in the chat, so my brain is mixing everything up.
Hey, Frank.
Frank in the chat showed up in the chat. But yes, Tommy, thank you for coming on in place of Frank tonight. I also just wanted to give, and I will again for Herms, but, you know, we do the little thing, who you are, what you do, where they can find what you do. Why don't you do that too, Tommy?
Yeah. Thanks for having me on, buddy. Love coming on, TA. Love you. I am on the Superflex Super Show with John Hogue. We're putting out strategy content instead of standard operating procedures every week now, which is so much more fun. We're still doing like the ads, drops, trade fours, like type stuff, but it's living in our Discord so that we don't have to spend 30 minutes in your ears, like telling you what everyone else is telling you every single week. So we're doing some pretty cool strategy stuff. I'd love for y'all to join the conversation. If you can join the Discord, it's pinned on my Blue Sky at FF Tommy B.
Okay, and Herms, why don't you again just remind everyone where they can find all your good stuff?
Absolutely. I explained it in a really long-winded fashion at the beginning. So if you want to rewind a little bit and get the full story about everything I'm doing, I already said it. Basically, ftnfantasy.com is where you can find a lot of stuff that I do. I also do some stuff at Fantasy Points. They're both very cool companies. And also, if you just want my thoughts, just on fantasy football stuff, I don't really post on Twitter anymore. It's not really my bag. I am mostly on Blue Sky at this point, so you can follow me there, just at herms.bsky.social. I wasn't lucky enough to get the at herms handle on Twitter, but I got it on Blue Sky, so that's all that matters. That's pretty cool. So if you want to hit me up, you can hit me up there. Thank you guys, as always, for having me on this delightful show.
Yeah, and thank you for coming on. I love both you guys. Two of my favorite people to talk to on a podcast, and such good friends of the show. I really appreciate having you both here tonight. Now I just got to do our business here. I am at Dynasty FF Addict on Twitter. if you enjoy the show, you can think about signing up for our Patreon, patreon.com/tradeaddictspod. You can see our beautiful faces here while we're recording. You can get into our Cool Kids Club Discord chat. A lot of good stuff in there, a lot of trade questions, a lot of stuff flying around in there. And then, as always, we finish up with the just promoting Fantasy Cares. Frank mentioned on here, they have the recap shows for Scott Fishbowl on Tuesdays. Just do whatever you can to support Fantasy Cares. I know Frank definitely is through. He basically watches everything that they put out for Fantasy Cares. So I know he's in the comments all the time there. But everything they do is great. So support them. And if you like us, support us too by at least listening here. We appreciate it. And I think that's it. Good night, everybody.
There you go.
Thank you for listening to the Trade Addict Podcast, a member of the DLS family of podcasts and a proud member in the Dynasty Addict Podcast Network. Please follow your hosts at Dynasty Haha and at Dynasty FS Addict. Please subscribe, rate, and review. We will catch you next time on the Trade Addict Podcast. Poopy Pants.
That is the best.
See ya.